Hello and welcome to QS Cast. Each week we take a look at the big stories in Magic Finance and give you the story on what's worth buying and selling. If you're subscribed to Quiet Speculation's Insider Service, you're hearing this podcast on Wednesday. If you're not already signed up, you had to wait till Friday to hear this. If you're not familiar with the Insider Service, head on over to quietspeculation.com and you'll find out about all the ways we can help you pay less money to play Magic.
Everyone, QS Cast. You know, I'm really I can't do this anymore, Tarkan. You're really flip flopping. This is getting crazy. But we're joined by a guest, a fellow QS writer, Sigmund Ausfresser. And I messed that up. I know I did. It's okay.
Yeah, it's Ausfresser. But
Ausfresser. Ah, it's all right. Welcome to the cast.
And to
Sigmund.
To be fair, we wanted to build around, you know, kind of work around Sig's schedule to make it as optimal for him. So you can't necessarily just say that I'm flipping it on you every week. Yeah. We're also trying to be as welcoming to our hosts and work with their time as well. So
yeah.
Don't always put it on me.
I'm starting to feel like I'm literally the only like remaining QS like member in the U.S. on a normal time. Everyone else is like literally everywhere. All right, let's get down to business. Sigmund, thanks for joining us. So kind of just to lay out what we're going to be talking about tonight, we are going to be kind of picking your brain about the last, I guess we'll say month or so, the last few articles that you wrote for QS Insiders. And it kind of seems like you have traversed through, you know, everything that's been going on recently and kind of the Magic financial landscape, we'll say, and you're kind of reevaluating your portfolio. I think that's like a really good way to put it. We talked about this before the cast, and kind of you came full circle and kind of have been reevaluating things. So we just want to discuss that. We will talk about interest as always. We like to at least look at what has happened from the previous week. Some. Kind of identify some good pickups going forward. So, and we'll get your take on that as well. So, just a lot of things going on that front because, you know, we're still seeing ripple effects from the Commander product. We're seeing ripple effects from some new spoilers we got from Aether Revolt. So, things are kind of good when this is, you know, going on. So, but let's just dive right in. So, Sigmund, where... You know, as of this recent article, where have you landed in terms of, you know, where you're going with Magic and your investing into Magic?
Yeah, it's a really good question, and it's been a bit of a journey. So I think I have to rewind back in time a little bit. There was a moment probably a year ago, year and a half ago, where I decided to focus the majority of my resources for Magic into old school stuff, legacy, vintage, and all the classic cards that I could find at a good value. And so, you know, when I was in Grand Prix Las Vegas, actually, that's where I sold all of my shock lands, all of, you know, I just had a ton of modern stuff. And I decided that with the Modern Masters sets coming out and the increase in rate of reprints, at least as I've perceived them, it represented a set of risks that I wasn't interested in taking. And so at that point, I decided I was going to move into old school. And I had my legacy deck, and I actually started working towards a set of power to build a vintage deck, and that's the evolution that I had taken at that point in time. Now, fast forward to the present, I started – well, I guess a couple of different catalysts took place that caused me to reevaluate things yet again. First, I'm sure most people know by now, but, you know, my family, we're expecting another baby come at the end of January.
Hey, congrats.
Thank you. So that's going to be a bit of a change. So that alone tells me, okay, there's going to be a lot less Magic playing time. You know, I don't play very often as it is, but that's going to reduce that amount of time even further. And then, you know, Star City Games, they back down on their legacy support. And correct me if I'm wrong, did Wizards also reduce the number of legacy GPs or something like that?
Yeah, there was a pretty drastic reduction, I guess, across the board when it comes to legacy. I mean,
yeah.
I've talked about this with Seth, pretty much everyone that I've podcasted with. I mean, there was a time where we were watching Legacy once a week. So,
yeah,
pretty
I
much,
missed that.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much we've gone from that to this. So it was a drastic decrease.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, not only was I not playing very often, but it didn't seem to have the same traction. Now, I'm sure there are local communities all over the world where people play Legacy rigorously and there's, you know, 20 people in an LGS every week, but I don't have that here. And so I started weighing the exposure that I had to the Magic finance market against the benefits I got from having the cards. And what I realized with Legacy in particular is there were a number of cards that I had some significant exposure to when it came to potential for reprints. I mean, I got crushed on Caracas, for example. So I kept the card. It was one of my sideboard cards in my Legacy deck, and you know that was considered sacred for a long time, and then it got reprinted, and so now I sold it for a lot less than what I had paid for it. And so I look at things like Flusterstorm. I play Storm in Legacy, or I used to, and I got crushed on Cabal Therapy. That was in Eternal Masters, and so there were enough cards in the deck and in the format that were concerning to me that I decided it just wasn't worth it, you know, to play once a year with a friend or, you know, something like that. It just wasn't worth the exposure. And so that's a major driver for why I sold out of Legacy. So now I'm in a place where, you know, yeah, it's nice that I sold my Legacy cards, except the vast majority of value in my portfolio lies with my Vintage deck and my Old School deck. And so I haven't made any moves on those yet. I had some Old School cards that I had bought to think like, hey, maybe one day I'll play these. And then I don't play them. And so I ultimately ended up selling a lot of them for some small gains. But I still have a large amount of value in those decks. And that's exactly where I'm at today, where I'm not sure what to do with these.
Right. So just so people that a lot of people know you, I've gotten to know you over, you know, the time that I started, you know, kind of getting into this whole MTG finance scene or whatever you want to call it, just looking at the game through a financial lens. You're kind of notorious for being really, I want to call it conservative, but you're right. Like, you don't want to take risks, and a lot of us largely don't. So where do you find yourself as kind of the low risk? I mean, I know it's we're going to have a discussion about the reserve list. I know I'm bracing myself for that. It's okay. I mean, we have had actually really productive conversations about that, and we kind of butted heads a little bit about this topic. But I mean, you know, even just coming from me, even if you took Sigmund's advice, right, and I'm going to just kind of be praising you here about, if you want to play this format like Old School or something like that, or if you want these reserve list cards, you know, even not in like a malicious way to like buy them out and like everyone's kind of like, you know, really, like you're that kind of, you know, you're doing that kind of stuff. But even if you just like, even if you bought yourself like just like a play set of cards just because you wanted to use them, I mean, it's undeniable that some of these cards have like gone up considerable. I mean, we're talking like hundreds and hundreds of percentages. Like, you look at a card like All Hallows Eve that was basically a year ago, you know, even 2 years ago was like, what, $20? Like,
yeah.
Has surged up over $100 just because it's like, it's an old card. People like it for whatever reason or, you know, old school implications. And some of these cards just inevitably go up. And it's like, you can't deny that. So, you obviously have that avenue of these non-risky propositions, but how do you look at, so this like new financial landscape where we're at like an unprecedented like six like or so, you know, products a year, all these supplemental products, where do you, outside the reserve list and old school, is there anywhere else that you kind of look at and say, you know, this is kind of, you know, not risky and I can still kind of get the most bang for my buck?
I would say absolutely. And, you know, the only asterisk I'd add to that is just you have to be willing to stay very much on top of the market, metagames, and what have you. I'm sure people made significant amount of money from the last Pro Tour. I personally did not. I don't know if people had followed along, but I tried picking up Etherworks Marvel the first time it spiked, and sure, I bought less than what it spiked to, but by the time the copies arrived, I wasn't able to sell them for any profit. But I'm sure there were people who were bought into it beforehand. They're the ones who probably made out like bandits. So I think it's definitely possible to make money, on cards that are not on the reserve list through Pro Tour or through understanding metagame shifts or through researching what the new commander generals are and what kind of cards supplement those decks really well. I personally haven't been able to invest a whole lot of time into that. The way I look at it is, right now, especially with the baby on the horizon, I want to spend minimal time researching a lot of these new sets, especially because there are so many of them. And so it's just difficult for me to identify where the opportunities are and then be agile enough to buy them and then sell them at the most opportune moment. And so that's where I get hung up. So yeah. It doesn't just because it doesn't work out for me doesn't mean it can't work for lots of other people.
So I'm kind of curious, Sig, since you've traditionally taken this sort of like, long-term, kind of just want to invest, put it aside and kind of watch it over time and not necessarily have to like you said, spend, X hours per week or just, be on top of metagames and this and that. Has your approach always been like, has it changed or evolved over the past year and a half when you're buying vintage? I'm just curious because you decided to sell out. I'm wondering, were you thinking when you were buying the legacy staples and whatnot that you were thinking, okay, well, these are going to be, I'm going to like basically throw these in a closet or have the decks for like the next 5 years anyway? Or were you anticipating like, I'm going to probably, look to move these within, under 24 months or something like that? And was there something that changed that? Or was that sort of always how you looked at it? And, I don't know if you were have been looking at things sort of on a much longer term lens and that changed, or if you had sort of always planned that to be sort of a 24 month out.
That's a really good question. And, I think you're going to start to identify some of the areas where I have some flaws. I'm human. I make mistakes, but I'm happy to talk through it. So when it came to Legacy, I had a ton of Legacy stuff a few years ago, probably 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago, something like that. And, I had the cards to build a number of different decks, and I was just the type of person who I wanted to have a playset as many different Legacy cards as I could. And it was at that time when I decided, I'm going to sell a lot of this stuff and I'm going to start focusing on family because my son was already born. And this is going to be the nucleus, the starting point for a fund that I'm going to kick off for my son's college. And so that was a decision I had made a while back. And I won't lie, I started missing the format. And it was a couple of years after that where I was looking at my positions. I had some cash because I had sold some other cards and whatnot, and I thought to myself, I really miss playing Storm and Legacy, and I still thought that at the time that the cards were solid buys, especially things like Lion's Eye Diamond and the dual lands and whatnot. And so I basically repurchased the cards I needed for Storm. And the plan was, a lot of these cards are going to go up in value over time, so I'll get that benefit and I'll get to play, and everything will be ducky. But, fast forward a year or what have you, and yeah, sure, Lion's Eye Diamond got bought out by Craig Berry, so that card went up in value, but Caracas was reprinted, that card got crushed. And right. The fetch lands didn't really move. The dual lands, they kind of jumped, they kind of dropped back down. The beat up copies don't sell for as much as like the near mint copies. And so I wasn't sitting on a whole lot of gains. I wasn't playing the deck. And so I just re-questioned myself, like, what am I doing and what's the upside versus what's the downside here? So okay. I guess I could have kept the Lion's Eye Diamonds probably, they're on the reserve list. But like things like the Judge promo Flusterstorm, why would I want to hold on to that? That card is just asking to get reprinted. I mean, any card that's not on the reserve list that's over like $20 to me is just like, what's the point? That's just taking on this excess risk. Why would I want that?
So let me ask you.
And that kind of leads me to.
No, go ahead, Targan.
No, I was going to say that sort of leads to my next question, which is, and this is also relates to the things that you've been talking about recently, is you had these life changes and cards are starting to sort of dip a little bit, and your whole perspective sort of, or what you're seeing going on in the market, in the Magic market specifically, has shifted too, and you kind of think that Magic right now is much, much, much more risky than it was a year ago, and due to a lot of things that are happening. And so your whole, I mean, from what I've read and what I've, you know, the exchanges on Twitter and whatnot, your whole kind of like, your whole perspective on Magic Finance has sort of kind of changed a lot recently.
Yeah, it's been shaken a bit. So I was telling Chaz this before we started recording here. I have my biggest fear in all of Magic Finance is the downfall of the game and me looking at all these pieces of cardboard thinking today, okay, they're worth significant amounts of money. You know, if you can, you know, imagine a vintage deck, it's got the full set of Power 9 and everything. And then my biggest fear is 10 years from now, 15 years from now, whatever the timeline is, the cards are worth far, far less. And then I think to myself, I kept all those cards. I played vintage once every 2 years. What was the point? And that's gotten right. me a bit nervous. And so that's definitely a factor for me because it's just the downside can be so profound. This is a game. It's a collectible card game, yes, but it's a game. It's controlled completely by one corporation. If Hasbro wanted to repeal the reserve list and print Black Lotuses to increase sales, nothing is there to stop them from doing it. And so I guess, you know, this is the paranoia, this is the Chicken Little in me, and I don't necessarily always act on these concerns or these fears, but this is in the back of my head. Combine that with the fact that I am putting this money aside long-term for my son's college education, and so I think I have X dollars in Magic, that's X dollars that I'm going to put towards his tuition when he's ready for college. So I don't want to look back and regret holding cards longer than I needed to, especially if I've made significant profit on them, because that's not the end game. That's not the end goal for, you know, for why I'm involved in this right now. So I guess it's just that fear, that concern that's definitely driving some of my choices.
Hey, I mean, you'll never go broke if you're taking profits, right?
I so, love that line.
Yeah.
I love that.
So let me ask you this kind of the same question but in a different way. Take your son out of it. Take like the not, you know, not a literal sense, but like take the idea, take all those ideas out of it. How would you, and this is kind of where I'm going back to, if you've been reading Sigmund's article, and this is like I wrote the comment on the article. I love that like you've kind of taken up this initiative. Tarkin and I have been touching on it, and we planned on elaborating, you know, and this is why we have you on. So take that all out of it. How would you, you know, as Sigmund, without having to, you know, worry about college funds and all that, would you have been consolidating your portfolio? Would you have been doing it the same way, kind of regardless of that fact? Like, you're just kind of looking at these cards, and you kind of hinted on this a little bit. You know, this card's $20. It's not on the reserve list. It could be reprinted at any time. Like, how are you – you kind of divulged a little bit about how you're consolidating your portfolio. You've started with Legacy. Like, how do you now go further into doing that? Like, what specifically do you want? Like, do you want a very small little stash of long-term stuff? Do you want to have a lot of just, you know – 80% just liquidity where you're just, you know, buying and selling stuff? And how do you kind of consolidate now?
Yeah, so my goal is to have, you know, a much, much smaller collection going forward. And so, you know, selling the Legacy deck was just one component, but I mean, I have, you know, little things. I have a couple of I have three EDH decks. I don't ever play EDH, just, and it's not because I don't like the format. It's just I very rarely play Magic, so the decks just sit there. And there are probably a few $5 cards, maybe a couple $10 cards in those. I don't need to keep all those. So I'm kind of just motivated to clear things out. And, you know, part of it is just this relieving feeling of having a smaller collection to take care of, fewer things to monitor. And so, yeah, that's kind of my plan. I probably will continue to keep an eye out for spikes and opportunities to get in right before the spike or to flip a couple things. You know, I bought some Etherworks Marvels over the weekend because I saw that they were pretty much dominating a couple of events. So I'm hoping that I can get those, but I have no intent on holding them. I plan on selling them as soon as they come. In fact, I just checked the tracking on the package. It should be delivered tomorrow, so I already listed them on eBay to make a small profit. I mean, yeah. I'm all for just – it's just to me, it's like the easiest profit is the best kind of profit. And, you know, that as a corollary, the most profit is not necessarily the best profit for me, just the easiest or the fastest.
Right, because, I mean – and I've talked with a lot of, you know, fellow writers at the site on other podcasts because they kind of – the way, you know, like you use the best. Like there's a lot of Chicken Little stuff, but really – this whole kind of like death of whatever, it's not really like that. Me and Tarkan kind of looked at this and we like the term like evolve. Like it has changed. And we've had store owners, you know, we had on last week Angelo, and he's kind of in a mindset, well, listen, like if you're not reevaluating the way you do business like on a year-to-year basis, like you're not doing it right anyway. Like, and that's that actually kind of resonated with me. It's like you should be doing this regardless of what Wizards is doing. Like you should be reevaluating your portfolios and the way you kind of look at things like almost every day. Like, you know, and if stuff is not working, like you shouldn't really just be hammerheading the problem until, you know, you should just, you know, cut your losses or your small percentage gains at this point, if any, and kind of just move on.
Yeah, I think there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, and our own lives, our lifestyles change. We have different priorities as times change, and it's important to reevaluate at each moment. You know?
Yeah. So the way I combat it is, you know, this kind of ever-changing landscape, and it feels like you kind of settled on this as well, because the counter-argument here is like, well, if you can go the other way and have like this massive collection and not everything gets reprinted at one time and you have like all these different prospects gaining all these little percentage points like as they don't get reprinted. Yeah. And that, you know, if that works for you, that works for you. But for me, it's like that just equals risk for me, whether that's legitimately a thing or not. But to me, it's a risky proposition because I just don't want to manage a collection of that size. And it's like I don't want to constantly have to check in on X card like, you know, every so often and see like, all right, well, what's this little card doing? What's this card doing? What's this card doing? Like, you know, and you have like 500 of these, right? So,
yeah,
you know,
I think the big thing now that we encounter, at least Chaz and I, And it's not – I don't want to say it's a huge rift, but there seems to be this growing divide of, you know, we tend to prefer – I don't want to say turn and burn, but you get something in – you know, if you're going to be that person that's really watching the market and really doing this, you're kind of moving – you're on shorter-term sort of prospects, and you're doing things – you know, you're kind of turning and burning and moving things quicker, whereas there's still a lot of people who like the – you know, buy a basket, a ton of stuff, or there's plenty of long-term prospects and things that you can buy long-term and just sit on. And I guess ultimately, you know, I'm curious, just overall, how do you feel about both approaches now, looking at what the market is today? If obviously it's going to change, it could change tomorrow, it could change in a year, but it's constantly changing. But as far as it is now and what's happened over the past year, like which side of the coin do you sit on, or and why, I guess, you know?
I'm definitely prefer the long-term camp, but I prefer to keep my long-term investments in things that won't get damaged by reprints, whether that be the reserve list or whether that be stuff like Beta Hypnotic Spectre. I don't care how many times I reprint Hypnotic Spectre, the Beta copy will always be worth a good amount and always offer upside potential. But that doesn't mean that that's the best option to make the most money or anything. That's just the way that – because I don't have a lot of time to put into it, that's the way that's worked really well for me. There's plenty of merit to the concept of flipping cards on, you know, on a dime. I just wrote an article about arbitrage. I think that's another major thing that people don't utilize enough, especially as the strength of the dollar continues to increase. I think that buying internationally to sell domestically can be something that people look into. So there's nothing wrong with buying cards to flip them overnight. But you know what? Where I don't see a lot of opportunity anymore is the reliable, standard, maybe even modern rotations or, you know, like let me give you an example. I used to have a hypothesis that if you bought the mana fixing rare lands, you know, like the duels, if you will, of any standard set right when the next block launches, right before the next block launches, if you buy a bunch of them, those will provide you good returns because once it's not being drafted and opened anymore, but people still need them for their standard decks, they'll go up in value. things like that, I just don't see happening successfully anymore. I think the last time I tried that was with the temples, and one or two of the temples from the Theros block did actually go up. I think I made a little bit of money on maybe the black-green one, but I also had a bunch of others, and they just sat there and rotted. So, you know, things like that where you're going to buy cards maybe for 6 months to 18 months or something like that, and you're going to either count on standard giving you value and with the what are they called? The expedition type things. I'm blanking out on the word.
The masterpiece?
Masterpieces, yes, yeah, thank you. I just feel like standard offers a lot less upside than it used to. And then with reprints and things like that, I just – you know, to me, that midterm stuff is what worries me. I think you're flipping cards very quickly. You're in cards for the long haul, and I don't really love the in-between that much anymore.
I couldn't have said it better myself, and that's kind of where I was going with that. That's kind of where I've landed as well because, you know, Sigmund, it's kind of, I guess, you know, the undertone here is always risk, and that's always something that we're going to talk about, and that's always something that you've written about and have been honestly transparent about since, like, you started writing. So it's like your kind of narrative hasn't changed on that one. And like you said, if that's not something that works for you, that doesn't mean it doesn't work, right? Because you look at the things, there are still opportunities. Like let's not put out lies there. Like, you know, Tarkan and I, you know, especially on this cast, you know, we have had guests on, you yourself, Sigmund. Like, there's still always going to be opportunities as long as the game is healthy, you know.
Right.
And there's things we still know, right? And you touched on this a little bit. Like, we still know that there's Commander products every year, and they, you know, if they're done well, like this last one, obviously has been received well. It causes ripple effects. There's a Pro Tour that follows every new set. So obviously there's opportunities there. There's a Modern Masters set, like, you know, so there's all these things, these factors that we still know, and those create opportunities. So for me, that short term, like, we know Aether Revolt is going to be coming out. We know there's a Pro Tour coming out for Aether Revolt. We know that Pro Tours basically means that there's cards that are going to be increasing, you know, up and to and a little bit after the Pro Tour. So it's like those little opportunities, yeah, it might have changed over the last few years, but there's still a great opportunity there.
Sure. The question I'll ask you is, what card are you buying into the Aether Revolt Pro Tour?
Well,
I have no idea. I don't know anything about Standard.
Well, I guess, that's why people subscribe to the site, right? Because it kind of seems like we have the good information. I guess that's like the golden opportunity right there, because it's right. Knowing the information and knowing it ahead of the time. And Kelly, I mean, he was supposed to, you know, he couldn't come on this time, but we're going to have you, Sigmund, and of course Kelly on. He used a great term, kind of these vessels of the marketplace. And I love that because, you know, you're taking that whole kind of speculation, like buy 500 copies. You're kind of, you know, day-to-day operations. You're like the vessel of the marketplace. You see opportunities, you take them, and you kind of leave that, like you said, that kind of middle ground out. Like, if you're going to be buying something, you're either buying it for the short term or the extreme long term.
Yep.
Yeah. So let's did you have anything to wrap up? Because let's talk about interest, because Sigmund's going to have to go here in a little bit.
I do have one.
I have one
other thing that I thought I'd throw out there just for
sure.
I'd like to get your perspectives on this. This is a doom and gloom type of scenario, but it's something that's also been running through my mind. My understanding is, and correct me if you have data to support otherwise, I think that there are a handful of players in Magic who control significant quantities of some of the really high-end type of cards. I mean, I'll throw out the name Dan Bach, but I know that there are others who own many, many, many Black Lodi and Moxin and all these other really high-end cards. And I feel like a lot of that value is concentrated in the market. So, you know, as we get to points where Wizards is reprinting things very rapidly, Standard is getting cheaper. Modern has gotten cheaper. Now, maybe if you're playing like Dredge or whatever the hot deck of the month is, it's not. But if you're followed Snapcaster Mage's value over the last 6 months or whatever, you'll see how much it's declined. So, I mean, there are plenty of cards that have dropped off in value. And I'm seeing a separation widen between some of the really high-end stuff and your standard and modern stuff. And so as the game ages and you have most players playing these newer formats with cards that are not worth nearly as much as they used to be, I don't know how people are going to get themselves into this high-end format. And so I'm concerned that, it used to be, I remember vividly, I think it was Ben Blyweiser, I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name, but the main buyer for Star City Games, he once talked about how, while Jace the Mind Sculptor was in Standard, you could trade them four Jaces to Star City Games and get a Time Walk. And those opportunities are obviously long gone. There's no Standard card that you can trade four of, probably not even like 10 or 20 of, to get a piece of power. That those days are long gone. And so what's gonna drive the demand for these really high-end cards? I think people are going to have to commit more and more new money to be able to get to that point, because you can't just open packs of Modern Masters and Standard and all of a sudden have yourself a Mox, like, just through a trade. Combine that with the fact that these big-shot high-end investors or holders or what have you, like, they can't take those cards with them. I'm going to be, it's a little gruesome, but...
No, I mean, you're right.
What are they have to sell them eventually. And, like, what are they going to do? What is Danbok going to do with 50 pieces, Black Lotuses or whatever?
Well, as long as you can find one buyer, right? I've talked about this at length with, on the Goldfish cast. And to me... And you're absolutely right, and that might not be a healthy thing, or it was a healthy thing at one point where you can kind of trade up into all these cards. You basically can't even do that anymore. There's definitely no way. You can't. There's no way. Unless you're, like, giving piles and piles of stuff. I mean, it's like, at that point, it's like, what am I doing? Maybe that's just, they go – they are now in that realm of collector's items. You know, people still buy old comics. I mean, people still buy, the first issue of Superman, like that kind of stuff. Like, that is basically the realm of all that high-end, really old stuff. Because, I mean, people legitimately, they might spring for one for an EDH deck. You know, they might, trade in a whole pile of stuff that they're not using in Standard or Modern and be like, you know what, I don't really want to do the grind of Standard and Modern anymore. I just want to play EDH. I want a Tabernacle, or I want, X card, like something like, Time Twist, or something like that. Maybe that's kind of where that goes, because as long as you have one buyer that's going to buy it for EDH, you have a buyer, right? Or sure. What have you. So that's kind of where that, to me, has gone, is that those are just, like, basically collector's items at this point.
And to you, those are collector's items that continue to rise in value monotonically, like they have been doing?
Well, I'll tell you what. I would always want something like that. Like, if I basically don't play Magic anymore and I just want to, play EDH, why not? Like, why wouldn't I, spring and trade all this crap that I'm not using, even if it's, three or five times the more amount that I would have been doing a few years ago? Yeah, why not? I mean, I still think they will hold value. They're probably not – it's not – as long as the game is healthy, they won't decrease drastically. But I don't know about these like kind of high percentage gains that they were seeing at one point.
That's what I'm worried about.
Yeah. I think they kind of will plateau unless, as the community gets larger, it's not increasing as the size it once was, but it might take a little bit longer, but as those percentages add up over the years as the community is increasing, I think then we'll start seeing that increase again. Because then the game is healthy. Sorry, go ahead, Tarkan.
No, totally cool. It's a really interesting thing to talk about, Sig, and we could probably talk for several hours about this topic alone, because I think it's actually much more complex than we have time for. But sure. Couple points here. One, I disagree that it's difficult to trade up into these things. It's not as easy as it was before, but if you're a Magic player who's really into Magic and if you have garnered enough interest to want to get power, that's a lot of interest in Magic, and I think that you can, with the way that prices, buy prices in general have gone up. When I say gone up, I mean like the spreads are really thin. Your buy-in compared to your sellout is really not as horrific as people think it is, particularly with stuff like standard modern. That's different from guys like us that are like investing in property and this and that. I'm talking about the general player. When they cash out, it's really not that bad. And with the way that credit systems are working and the array of credit systems that are available to you to use, I would disagree that it's like next to impossible to trade up to these things. I think that, yeah, maybe you can't do it at one GP with things that you crack like there or a deck that you're playing. But if you have a collection over the course of a year and you love Magic and you've gotten into Modern and you've done these things, I think you can easily trade up to a piece of power. I'm not saying you can get everything at once. So I don't necessarily think it's like it's impossible. It may not be as easy, but I don't think it's impossible. And I think people that are that interested in Magic and want to do it, we'll be able to do it. I would say you could even do it within a year or maybe even 2 years of playing the game.
I don't know. That's point. You're gonna. It definitely. It's gonna have to be. We're gonna have to. That's a shitload of Dipalas. I mean, and like Sky Sovereigns and stuff like that. I mean,
right.
I don't. It depends on which one you're talking about, but okay, I don't think every single one's on the table.
But a Jund deck. Wait, a Jund deck is upwards of. Yeah. Like 2 grand. I'm not saying the kid who goes to an FNM with one standard deck. I'm saying if you really, really are interested in Magic,
sure.
The point where you want to figure out how to trade up, like in a year or two, you can make that happen. Like it doesn't involve like thousands and thousands of cards to do that. And also again, like if you're taking credit, like the way that the credit system works these days, like it's possible to do it. I'm just saying I don't think it's like. I don't think it's so hard or it's so impossible. That's just how I'm seeing it or you know, kind of my take on it. I think if people want it, they can get it. It's not impossible to do. I don't think it's as easy as it was before, but I don't think it's impossible. One. Second of all, I think that the point of like the concentration of this stuff, and this is I sit exactly where Chaz is. These things are going the way of are going to end up going the way of collectibles if they don't. If there's no play demand, these are going to be collector's items because these guys are like – they're like art collectors, right? And I know, you know, we briefly sig on in the forums or in the, you know, article responses we talked about this. But Dan Bach having 50 Lodi, he's not incentivized. It's not like he maybe owns them for an investment, but he partially owns them because he loves having them. It's sort of like that guy, I don't want to get into the guy, but the guy Rudy that does the videos on YouTube, he hoards all these graded 10 graded Lotuses or just these alpha cards, right? And you know these guys, they're not gonna take them with them, but they're literally gonna hold on to them. I believe that these guys would hold on to them, and they're their own sort of like. They're their own like art collector demographic of the marketplace. It's almost like they're a completely separate marketplace. And Sig, you're familiar with the high end page and you've done business there, I'm sure. But like a lot of this stuff, they buy and sell to each other. They don't even necessarily. A lot of this stuff doesn't even exchange a lot of hands down. They end up trading amongst each other. And I know that there's a couple of guys that have been working on building these like robust like graded power collections like. These guys are really in it for the long haul, and I don't think that they're going to go anywhere or they're going to dump these things because Magic's in a we're entering a bear market or Magic's starting to like. In fact, even if they, I think if Magic started to fade out in paper, these things would still be a totally separate collectible kind of market. They're on their own independently, and I do think now just again the point to your point of gains. I do think that they will grow over time. I do think that Black Lotus is going to continue to go up. Do I think it's going to hit insane percentages and do what it maybe did 5 years ago? No, I don't think that. But I do think over the long term, 10 years, Lotus will be worth more than it is today. How much that is, that's tough. That's another even separate conversation of how much that's going to go up. But I do think overall these things will continue to increase. They're in their own sort of like demographic as far as like these diamond buyers and collectors. And I think they're collectibles. I mean, Niels from QS wrote a really interesting article on the collector's sort of mindset and trading to collectors. And these guys, like they buy 50 of these things. They want all editions. They want the mintiest of mints. They want everything. Like they're really, it's its own kind of category. So I have total faith in the super high end stuff. I do.
All right. We're going to leave it at there. Sigmund, I know you have to go. So just quickly out the door, let's just do interests.
Sure.
So what would you be what interests you right now? Do you see, you know, we look at cards from last week. We kind of have a few days, you know, in between there. What has jumped out at you? What would you be looking to acquire? Because I know you picked up some stuff from the kind of the SCG, we'll call it the penny stock sale, but what else kind of caught your eye here? And I know we see All Hallows Eve right at the top, so.
Actually, I'll be the first to say, I don't think All Hallows Eve is an old school card. I've never seen it in any lists.
Okay.
So it kind of surprises me to be on there. I love the card. I kind of joke sometimes that that's like the first card officially that was made with Suspend. But, you know, looking at the interest lists, I did pick up some Aetherworks Marvels over the weekend because I saw it was doing really well. There were plenty of copies under $4 on, what was it, Saturday. And so I did pick up not a ton. I don't usually buy super deep into anything these days. Do you want me to just keep running down like this list? I'm kind of shocked by Chromantic Lantern. I can't believe that it was just reprinted and it's already like $10 again. To me, that's pretty shocking. If I had any copies, I would start thinking about selling them soon, but I really don't. Going to the more interesting ones for me, I'm looking at some of the reserve list stuff like Alabara's Carpet, or however that's pronounced. I used to have one of these. I think it's a pretty cute card, but I don't know, again, what the relevance is for old school. It costs 5 mana, and then it's another 5 mana to activate, so it's probably just like a collector's thing where the amount on TCG player just continues to drop. One that does really interest me, but it's gotten pretty expensive lately, is Wheel of Fortune. I've actually written about this a couple of times. Yeah. Reserve list card, you know, it's gone up quite a bit over the last, you know, 2 months, 3 months or what have you. And then was it Leovold from Conspiracy? He's the one that doesn't let players draw them more than one card a turn or something like that, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so it seems like does he have red in his,
no.
in his color?
No, he's bug colors.
So this is not really something that would be playable with that. So maybe this is just reserve list speculation. Why would Wheel of Fortune be going up so much?
There's a certain fellow over here. Yeah.
I saw that Wheel of Fortune a long time ago. And what I noticed with Wheel of Fortune and Sig, I think I actually was inspired by some of the work that you did, but I noticed the differential in the pricing between the unlimited copies and the revised copies. And I was like, wait a minute, like, why is the unlimited copy almost gone and it's like $100 or $200 or something, and the revised copy is $25? And I'm like, and it's reserve list. And I was like, guys, it's $25. Like, there's no way that this is gonna last. Like, I'm not saying it's gonna be $100 tomorrow, but if the multipliers between unlimited and alpha and beta are like maybe 1 to 2x, maybe 1x 2x, there's no reason why there should be a 4 or 5x multiplier between the revised and the unlimited. And I think this sort of attested. I mean, it does see play. It sees some play in EDH or in Commander. It's not a huge staple, but and I don't know about old school. I don't play enough old school, or I'm not familiar enough to know if it's played a lot in that. But I think this is just simple slow correction, price correction.
It makes sense. I mean, how many cards have this power level at this, you know, mana cost? They've made Wheel of Fate and other kind of spin-offs since then, but I don't think there's anything on this level printed since Wheel of Fortune, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, not really, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, so if you've got that, you've got that it's reserve list, it's legal in EDH, it's playable in old school, it's played in Vintage. I run it in Vintage, so, I mean, it's definitely a powerful card. So I can't see this card ever dropping in value. It's a great example of something that you could sit on for the long term. I liked it a lot more in the 20s than I liked it in the 40s, but I don't see it dropping.
Yeah.
All right. So you have Aetherworks Marvel, you have a couple long kind of pickups there. Okay. Tarkan. Go ahead.
I'm curious to hear what you guys are looking
Tarkan.
At.
Well, it's so funny you go from Wheel of Fortune to Wheel of Fate. Wheel of Fate is actually my pick for this week. And it's in the foil version. Wheel of Fate got a reprint in Commander 16, and we've seen, I mean, I agree with you, Sig. I'm quite surprised by Chromatic Lantern 2, and it seems like Commander 16 has just really, really churned a huge amount of interest in Commander, and stuff just keeps going up. Wheel of Fate was reprinted. If it goes the way as something like Chromatic Lantern, where it drums up a lot more interest. The foils of the Time Spiral version are nearly gone. On TCG Player, there's less than half a page of sellers, lightly played and near mint copies. I don't know about the rest of the like Star City or the rest of the market, but they're between $7 and it looks like $10 to $12. That one, that's easily, I think that could be a $20 to $25 foil, due to scarcity and, you know, renewed interest in and kind of heightened interest with Commander 16 and EDH. That's mine.
Yeah. So a couple weeks ago when we had Steven on, we talked about the Chain Veil. So no, and I know apparently we're late on this one, but I know a lot of other people have talked about the Chain Veil over on the Cartel Cast. They had me on there. So I see one. I'm actually gonna post more of these on the actual article for the QS page for the insiders, but. I'm starting to see a couple of the cards that we talked about a few weeks ago, so I'm looking at least from today and from last week, we see Master Transmuter. We've seen just some like Time Sieve. So it kind of feels like the wagon is circling to the next, like, most, I guess, hyped up commander, and that seems to be like Brea. I like Scourglass a lot, actually. No reprints. Not a lot of supply. The foils are pretty scarce, and this seems, at least to me, really good in those decks. I mean, it's pretty much a one-sided Wrath, so I think there's going to be some renewed interest in Scourglass. And if you look at the graph, even over the last 3 years or so, it's gone nowhere but up. So I think it might be pretty good to pick these up at like $2, because it probably will be considerable amount more here soon.
Wow, I'm on TCG Player. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I haven't heard of this card in so long, and shame on me maybe for that, but I'm looking at TCG Player. There are two sellers of foil Scourglass.
Yeah, and not many normal foil or normal copies. So, yeah, there's not many out there, but so that's going to be my choice. Just one that really pops out for me. All right, Sigmund, where can they find you on the interweb, the internets?
So my articles go live once a week on quietspeculation.com. They go up every Monday, and then you can follow me on Twitter at sigfig8.
Awesome. Tarkan.
Yeah, I'm at the underscore Tark, T-A-R-K, on Twitter. I'm do admin work over at the MTG Finance Central Facebook page. You can see me over there, and I work with QS.
Awesome. Yeah, Twitter is probably the best place for me to find me, at ChazVMTG. I write weekly for QS, insider articles, spoiler coverage. I do it all, the podcast. So, yeah, find me there as well. All right, everyone, that's going to be a wrap. So take care. We'll see you all next time.